I'm just going to introduce Dale. I first met Dale because our small group, now growth group, but it was a small group when we started, did the Luke 14 study group from CBM, which is about disability, helping people to understand the issues of people with disability. And Dale was one of the star guys in that. And I thought, oh, that's an interesting guy. I must get to meet Dale. And I did. And in fact, I've since asked Dale to come onto the board of CBM Australia. And he's agreed to come and talk to us today. I'm not going to take away his thunder. I sent out a note to you all about Dale. And so you've got a fair idea of his background. But I'm going to hand over to Dale now. Let's give him a warm round of applause. And for you guys that thought you had to get up early this morning, Dale had to get up even earlier. So he's done very well to get here. Thanks, Dale.
You know, last night I was at my mother's house and my sister was there with her fiance. And I said, man, I'm going to go to this men's breakfast in the morning. What am I going to talk to these guys about? And my sister's fiance said, tell them, what on earth are you doing up at 7 o'clock on a Saturday morning? I thought, that's a fair point. What are we doing up at 7 o'clock in the morning? But the point is that I've spoken at hundreds of these men's breakfasts, and regardless of what time you have to get up, it's always a great morning. And I think that's worth it to get up and sacrifice one Saturday in a month maybe, or however often you do them. But, you know, just getting together with a bit of food and some blokes is a pretty good thing. And it's one of those things that I really enjoy. And that got me thinking this morning at about 4 o'clock. When I woke up, I was like, oh, 4 o'clock, okay, I've got an hour before I need to get up and think about getting ready. But 4 o'clock this morning, I thought, you know what? I don't know what I'm going to talk about. I'm going to talk about real men. Because, you know, we all strive to be a real man. And that then made me think about my father. And talking with one of the blokes about 30 seconds ago, my father has now graduated, meaning he's upstairs with the Lord. But it got me thinking about my dad, and my dad being this real man, this real blokey bloke. And we referred to my father as Triple T. Now, years ago, there used to be this TV show called Tim Taylor, Home Improvements. You guys remember that? And this guy was like a real blokey bloke, you know? He would soup everything up and make these kind of failures, big ones usually, and they were quite comical and quite funny. Well, we called my dad Triple T, which was Try Hard Tim Taylor, because dad was this real blokey bloke. He was a butcher, and he never showed any emotions. He was a real man's man, you know, a real blokey kind of guy. And you'd ask him to fix anything around the house, he'd fix it. And real blokey kind of bloke. And which got me thinking about Triple T, Try Hard Tim Taylor, and being a blokey bloke. And the first time that I saw any emotion out of my dad was when he was diagnosed with cancer, terminal cancer, which then made me go, well, why is it that blokey blokes, you know, us kind of guys that are real tough on the exterior, tend to share our emotions when something devastating happens? And for me, that devastating thing was the wheelchair. And to give you a bit of my background, a bit of my experience about what happened. I was 18 years old and I had everything, like absolutely everything I ever wanted. And physically, I was quite capable to the point of being a Melbourne Tigers basketball player. So I know I don't look like it now, but I'm actually 6'3" if I were to stand up. And you only really notice it when I put my hand up. So when I sit, you kind of go, oh, yeah. But when I put my hand up, you can kind of go, oh, okay, there's a bit of height in this guy. So I played basketball for Melbourne Tigers. I was kind of like the jock of the school. You know, the guy that was in the in crowd, the guy who had plenty of girlfriends and all of those kind of things. And I grew up in a church, in a Christian family. And my father was this guy who never showed us any emotions, never praised us, never built us up. And so we were always striving to get his approval. And always striving to prove a point to him. You know, which in turn made me this kind of person who was striving to be a what I thought was a blokey bloke, like a real man. And it was one night that I was out with the youth group that I was really struggling with this whole concept of God. You know, I heard about it and I sort of was really heavily involved in the church operations, you know, running youth group and part of the sound team and really heavily involved in it. And my mother was the church secretary, and so we were kind of really heavily involved in the church. But I struggled with this concept of God and God actually being real. And what I thought was, well, everyone says that he's real. Everyone says that, you know, this God hears you and answers your prayers and all of these, what I now call Christian cliches. Let's put it to the test, was my thinking. Let's see if God really answers prayers, you know. Surely if he's real, then he'll answer. So this night was a Sunday night. We went to church at night for the youth service. And then after that, we went out for fish and chips and we ate at Brayside Park, which you may not know of because it's southeast kind of suburbs. And whilst we ate our fish and chips, I thought to myself, you know what, I'm going to go for a walk. I walked and I found this playground and I climbed to the top of the playground. On top of the playground, I said this prayer. All right, God, if you're real, show me. And prove it by giving me a challenge. The next day, I got up. At that time, I worked for a toy store called World for Kids. And I rode my bike to work. I had been taking my mum's car, but for some reason, I decided to ride my bike this day. I worked the full day, and then on my way home, I was actually going home to get changed and then to go and meet a guy called Glenn Williams, who you may or may not have heard of, but Glenn Williams was the founder of Focus on the Family here in Australia. And I had a mentoring program starting up with Glenn. So I was going from work to home to get changed to Glenn. From Glenn, I was then going to the Bryan Adams concert. I know. Don't hold that one against me. My mum bought the tickets. But that's where I was going. That was my plan. So I jumped on my bike after work. I was riding on the way home. And I got probably within a kilometre, 1.5 kilometres from my house. And what I didn't see was a four-wheel drive, which I was following. He turned left on a T-intersection. I turned left just behind him. He stopped. I didn't see him stop. And I rode my bike straight into the back of it. Now, you might be thinking, well, it's just a push bike. How on earth could you do any damage on a push bike? Well, like I said, I was a pretty capable young man, and I was doing about 37 kilometers per hour into a dead stop, into a brick, almost like a brick wall. It was one of those old Toyota Land Cruisers, you know, the yellowy cream ones. So it was like Sherman tank, you know. It stopped, bang, straight in the back. And I actually broke my neck in three places and dislocated it in two and was on the ground fighting for my life. You know, the one person who I rang, well, I didn't actually ring them, but I gave the phone number to the people who came out. The one person I rang was my dad, who was at home at the time. I knew he was home. And the one thing I said to him was, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. And, you know, you sort of go, what the heck's going through your mind when you're on the ground fighting for your life and all you can think of is, I'm sorry. You know, it was, to this day, I still think about that and I could not ever comprehend what my dad would have felt seeing his son on the ground. And I'm a father myself. And I thought, how did he hold it together? How did my dad hold it together? And you kind of think, gee, was that a real blokey thing, holding it together? Or would have been the real man thing to do would be to break down and let it all out? You know, quite often I think about these things and think, you know, there's a real misconception around what a man should be and what a real man is. You know, sure, my dad was a wonderful role example and a wonderful thing to live up to. But gee, I wish I would have seen a bit more emotion from him. And quite often as men, we tend to cover our emotions up because we want to be real men. And this couldn't have been the stark contrast to my father-in-law. My father-in-law is the other way, where, you know, he'll cry every sentence, you know, that he's talking. And this really messed with my understanding of what a man was when I met him and eventually married his daughter. And, you know, that's 13 years that I've kind of known him. And it's really kind of messed with my whole upbringing and my whole understanding. But my accident made me realize so many more things about what a man should be. You know, I thought the man of the house, the man of the family, all those things, had to be this guy that could fix things like Triple T. You know, like my father, who fixed just about anything. Sure, some of them were slightly dodgy. And I remember, I'll tell you this story. This is an absolute ripper. I'll never forget it. There's two times. My dad and electricity was not a good thing. But somehow he thought he could do it. So, you know the canaras that you get that are the wood fires and they have the fan? Well, my dad decided that he was going to relocate it from that room and put it in the family room, and he thought he'd just wire it up himself. I'll never forget it. It blew him halfway across the room when he, you know, touched him wrong. And, I just remember him sitting on the ground going, oh, I won't do that again, you know. And, that was my perception of what we should do as men. You know, we can fix everything. You know, we can do anything we want. And to some degree, my father-in-law is the same. He has this perception that, oh, I can fix anything. I can do anything. The difference between my father and my father-in-law is the emotions. Yeah, certainly he will show his emotions, which is quite difficult for some of us. And I guess there are so many struggles that we have in life where a bit of emotion is good, and showing your emotion is good. And which made me think about Triple T. And at 4 o'clock this morning, when I went, oh, I'm going to talk about real men, what real men are, I'll talk about my dad, Triple T. Which I then started thinking about Triple T. Yeah, we called him Try Hard Tim Taylor. But Triple T, when I started thinking about it, could be a real good definition of a man. Trustworthy, truthful, and transparent. You know, as a man, we have to be trustworthy. And you hear it all the time. Well, I hear it in my house. Honey, can you fix this? Can you do this? Can you help me with this? What should I do in this situation? You know, people come to us men because they trust us. Yeah, and sometimes it takes a long time for you to earn that trust. And I think you only earn trust when you're truthful and you're transparent. You know, when you're truthful, there's no denying it, you know. And the Bible is so clear on about being truthful. You know, it says, let your yes be yes and your no, no. Be truthful. You know, speak the truth in all situations. And when you speak the truth, you gain trust. And you become trustworthy. And when you're transparent, people see the real you. They see the real man. You know, and I wish that I saw a bit more transparency in my father. I see it in my father-in-law, but I wish I saw it a little more in my father. Which then makes me think as a parent, well, I need to be really transparent with the people that I engage in with and the people that are within my family. And, you know, sometimes transparency is the one thing I don't want to be, purely because of my situation that I'm in. You know, and I have lots and lots of struggles that are on top of your normal day-to-day things, purely because of the situation that I'm in physically. And I tell you honestly, it sucks. And it sucks royally to be in this situation. You know, things just don't work like they used to work. My level of injury is from about here down. And you can kind of see that my hands don't work, really. And if you shake my hand, which you're more than welcome to come and shake my hand afterwards, but I've got no grip, so I can't squeeze your hand. And, you know, it frustrates the living daylights out of me being in this situation. But what can I do? I can't fix it. No one can fix this situation. So I have to. A lot of people ask me, "Well, how do you do it then, Dale? How do you get through each day?" And I'll always say, the only way that I can get through is fully relying on God. It's the only way I can do it. And quite frankly, I don't understand how anyone in life can get through without reliance on God. And it took me, my accident, to realize that. On the 12th day after my accident, I realized that, oh, I can't do life by myself. I can't. Especially now, I can't do it by myself. I need to have help and assistance from God. And sometimes that goes right against our manly instincts of saying, well, I can do it. I can get over this thing. I can get through this. I can fix this. But it took me to break my neck to realize that, no, well, no, I can't. I can't. I need the help that can only come through a relationship with Jesus Christ. And that in itself takes a level of transparency, a level of vulnerability to say, hey, you know what? I need help. And sometimes in my situation, I need help. And I hate it. Let me tell you, I hate getting help. But sometimes we need it, don't we? Sometimes we need a bit of help. And, you know, I know that we want to break up in a minute and have a little bit of conversation between small groups. I'm not sure how you break up, whether you just turn your chairs around or whatever you do. And some questions that you, for you to sort of think about and talk about. I will say now, before you break up and stuff like that, that I'm probably one of the most open guys you'll get to meet. And even more so, one of the most open guys you'll get to meet in a chair, in a wheelchair. So after we break up and have a bit of a conversation in some small groups, think of some questions to ask me that you probably wouldn't necessarily ask someone that you've just met. Because I'll answer them. I've got no real qualms about, you know, you asking any question whatsoever. So feel free at the end, when there's a bit of time, to ask me anything. And I'm quite happy to answer it very openly, because I saw my father, who was a bit closed off in those kind of things. And I will go right out of my way to share and open my life and some of the struggles that I have and some of the solutions that I've tried to have to fix some of these issues that I have. So feel free at the end to ask me. But it got me... What got me thinking about, well, what would I get you guys to talk about in your groups? And I asked my mum, I said, what would you say is the toughest thing as blokes? What would you say was the toughest thing? And I think that would be my first question to you. What is the toughest thing as a man? What's the thing that you find the hardest as a man? Now, I know that you may feel maybe a little uneasy talking about this within your groups, but there's a thing called Chatham House Rules. Does anyone know what Chatham House Rules is? Chatham House Rules is whatever is said in here stays in here. It cannot go out. And I deal with a lot of law firms. One of those is Minter Allison. So I don't know if you know Minter Allison, but they're one of Australia's biggest law firms. And I always say in meetings with them, is it Chatham House Rules in here? Because if it's not, then they can take my advice and go out and use it. So I always say, it's Chatham House Rules. It's Chatham House Rules in here, meaning whatever we say in our small groups is here. End of story. It doesn't go any further. And so I encourage you to sort of say, well, what is the hardest thing as a man? You know, and that might be showing your emotions. It might be sex. It might be pornography. Yeah. It might be these things that are really tough to deal with. And I kind of said there's no off limits with me. I'll go anywhere. So what is it that's really tough as a man? And then the ultimate question is, well, how do we deal with these things? How do you, as an individual, overcome the toughest thing? You know, and these are, I know they're somewhat tough questions, but it'll take a fair level of openness within your group. And please feel free, you guys know each other better than I know any of you. Be somewhat accountable to each other as well. Like, I personally have 2 accountability groups and a mentor as well. So the best thing that you can do as a man is to get rid of all the boundaries, get rid of all of the closets, if you like, and say, you know what? I struggle with lust. I struggle with rage. I struggle with my temper. I struggle with doubt. You know, is God real? I struggle with that, you know? These are some of the things that men, as men, need to go, well, if I struggle with that, surely someone else in the room struggles with that. Yeah. Today's technology, years ago you would maybe have to go into a magazine shop to get pornography, but these days you get it on your mobile phone. You know? So, as men, we need to get rid of this notion of a real man is a man that is, you know, big-shouldered and closed off. And a real man is one that is trustworthy, transparent, and truthful. Because I guarantee it, like, I've had conversations with people and with men, guarantee it, that if you say, I'm struggling with, 3 or 4 people in your group are going to say, yes, I struggle with that, or I have struggled with that. So, quickly break up. I will wrap up a little bit more at the end, and feel free to ask me questions. First question, what is it that you struggle with the most? And the second is, well, how can we, you or us, overcome it?